Wisconsin's Government Accountability Board has had its hands full this year. It's had to handle a recount for a Supreme Court election. It's now working on recalls for up to 9 state senators. It's worked with both the leaders of the state assembly and Senate and both political parties to move next year's presidential primaries and the partisan primaries. And it's about to implement one of the biggest changes in decades, photo ID. So Kevin Kennedy, Director and Chief Counsel of the Government Accountability Board, thanks. You know, we could do about 2 hours on all these changes, but let's confine it to just the photo ID, okay?
Well, that's 2 hours right there.
No, it can't be. We're going to boil it down. We're going to try to make it understandable. But,
okay.
Well, first of all, let's put the photo ID change in context. Biggest change in how Wisconsin conducts elections in?
I'd say since we implemented Election Day registration in 1976.
1976.
And we did that a lot more quickly than we were doing this, because that was passed in the spring of 76 and went into effect that fall.
Okay. But the photo ID proposals have been around for decades in the Capitol. So this is something that you, since you've been doing this job for, tell me again?
30 years. 31.
So you've had a chance to think about this, but now it's law, and it's going to kick in potentially real soon. So my goal here is, rather than have two people talking about it, let's do a summary of the actual law. Maybe that'll provide more help to voters. But the point is, in the Senate recall elections and any special elections, and there's going to be a special election in Assembly District 48, remind me, what's the date?
July 12th is the primary, and there's only Democrats running. We'll have an election on August 9th, but whoever wins the primary, for all practical purposes, will win the election.
Okay.
Unless there's a very strong write-in campaign in August.
Which means that if all 9 senators are tested, there's both primaries and general elections, and there could be a primary and a general in the 48th Assembly District. So people in 9 regions of Wisconsin are going to be confronted with a whole new demand when they go to the polls, right?
That's correct. Very much so.
Well, let's begin to work through what the law means in 2011. So we prepare a summary with the cooperation of your staff. This year, Senate recalls and special elections. Number one, voters will be asked for photo ID in Senate recall and special elections as a dress rehearsal for spring 2012, and photo ID will be required. Now, there's some caveats there. Voters without photo ID will still get a regular ballot. Voters without photo ID will get information about the requirement for 2012. Okay, Kevin, tell me how big a deal this is. People are going to be surprised, aren't they?
Well, on one level, they'll be surprised, but on the other hand, there's a lot of information that's already been out there that this is going to happen, and a lot of attention. These elections are very high visibility elections. We had a lot of visibility for the 48th Assembly District even before it was called. When was it going to get called? So people are paying attention to these elections because they're unprecedented. And so it makes it easier to say there will be something different when you get ready for these elections. One, when you walk into the polls, you will be asked, do you have a picture identification or photo identification? We've actually written up a script for the poll workers to use. But, you know, well before they walk into that, members of the public and voters will have seen this information out there. Our website has been a wealth of information, and we're redesigning it now to go back from the history of photo ID and the legislative back and forth that we spent so much time on this spring and trying to refine the proposal so that it would work smoothly, to really, what do you need to know come July 12th? What do you need to know at subsequent elections this year? We will also launch an informational campaign to get ready for the full implementation of this, where you will need it as a condition of voting beginning in the spring of 2012.
So do you think, if I'm following closely some of these Senate elections of the 48th Assembly, then I'm not going to be surprised when I walk into the polling place and I'm asked for a photo ID, Kevin?
I think most people will not be surprised.
Will not be.
There's always people who are surprised. I have a few municipal clerks who, looking at some of the emails, are like, where's the information? And we're like, well, we gave it to you.
Right.
So, I mean,
that's happening with clerks, so that's going to happen with voters.
It always happens with voters, you know. I mean, we have one of the pranks that comes up that, you know, that one party will vote on the day of the election and the next the other day to reduce crowds. And some people buy that. So,
okay.
You know, but I think, again, these are very historic elections we're looking at, and a lot of attention being paid to them. So you know, it's almost like we're getting additional information about it. The media does a great job on this, and yes, there's always going to be surprises, and you try to plan for those worst case scenarios, and that's why this is a dress rehearsal.
Okay.
You know, a soft way of bringing this in by asking them, but saying, you know, if you don't have it, here's some information so you're prepared for the next time.
But your dress rehearsal is only being held in 10 pockets of Wisconsin, potentially.
That's right.
Assuming there's the 9 Senate recalls.
But if any of the assembly people that are challenging the incumbent senators win, we'll have special elections there.
That's true.
We always have a lot of referendum elections, but it's not going to be statewide. I mean, these 9 elections, that's, you know, 3/11 of the state.
Yes.
Plus another 1/199th if you're parsing it out for the assembly district.
Which means that there's 8/11 of the state that is not going to have this dress rehearsal, and they're going to be surprised when they go to the polls next year.
That's
but
right.
Let's finish with this year. Point two, residency requirement changed to 28 consecutive days instead of 10. My understanding is it's been for decades. If you proved you'd lived at the residence for 10 days, then you could vote. Now, that's been raised to 28?
It's been raised to 28. And it was also clarified that it's 28 consecutive days. We've had issues in the past with concerns about people who have two homes who might want to claim their vacation home as their voting residence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether it was in-state or out-of-state people, that was always one of those undercurrents that people had some concerns about. So when the legislature looked, there was a concern that 10 days didn't provide enough ties to that district for voting, that maybe it ought to be a longer period. But by U.S. Supreme Court decision, really 30 days is the outside that any state can impose, and that's what most states settle on. Wisconsin has 10 days. There's a handful of states that have no residency requirement. Minnesota has 15 days. California has 15 days. There's a range within that period. The legislature, this particular legislature, said we want to clarify by making it 28 consecutive days. So it means for the July 12th elections,
yes,
you have to have lived there by June 14th.
And what there has been a list of things that are accepted in terms of proving how long I've lived at a residence. Can I still present the same things, or has that also been changed under the photo ID law?
It's almost all identical except in the case of college students. They actually added an option for college students. Currently, a college student could use a photo ID issued by the university in conjunction with a certified list of your on-campus address provided mm-hmm. by the college or the university. They've now added you can use the photo ID along with a fee card if the fee card is not too old. And again, the fee card has to have your address from which you want to vote from.
Okay. Well,
and this is all a key, you know, proof of residence is important because we have Election Day registration.
Yes.
People who are already registered don't have to provide that. But, you know, in Wisconsin, we let people show up on Election Day and either change their address for voting purposes or register for the first time.
And there were some lawmakers who said we should do away with same-day registration. You're glad we didn't?
I'm very glad we didn't.
It
would have made our elections much more expensive, would have made our voter lists much more out of date.
Okay. Point three, shorter time for early voting at clerk's office, 2 weeks instead of 4. Well, is this going to be a big deal? And why is it in there?
Again, I think that we've seen trends in the last 3 elections to more people voting in person, really trying to adjust their schedules, mm-hmm. Voting absentee in advance of the election. In fact, both political parties make that a part of their campaign. You know, vote early, and then come help turn out the rest of the vote, or come watch the election, or you know, work with us. It's another way of engaging their electorate. But part of it is if they know that who their supporters are, get that vote in the box now.
Okay.
And that led to a lot of work by the municipal clerks. There was a concern. The big change is that. And this helps the local election officials more than it does the voter, is that you can't vote the weekend before or the day before the election. Absentee voting ends the Friday before the election.
Okay.
Clerks can stay open as long as they want, presumably till midnight on that. The shortening period, again, was to provide a definite period for voting. Normally, absentee voting, as soon as the ballots are available, which is anywhere from three weeks to 30 days before the election was the time period. We limited really just those 2 weeks right before the election and not the day before.
And number four, moving on, Kevin, the changes that will be in effect in any elections held this year, voters must sign a new thing, the poll book. What's that?
Well, you know, this is a tool that has been used in other states. Many states, the voters sign the poll list. It serves a couple purposes. One, it forces the voter to get their name signed next to their name so that the poll workers don't make a mistake when they assign a number. It's not unusual when you just put in a number down to get out a sequence. But and the poll books have been redesigned so that when you look at the poll book, the poll worker can read your name, but there's also a signature line that faces the voter with a watermark of the voter's name, and they can just simply sign right there. It also gives us some evidence in those cases where someone's trying to impersonate another voter.
We've got a
handwriting exemplar. But again, like I said, it takes the process and makes it a bit more focused, which is helpful for making sure that we get a record. Also, if voters skip a number, here's the person's name right next to it.
Even though some of these, sometimes when people sign their names, we can't read them. That's not a factor?
That's a factor in the sense that even if we can't read them, when we're looking at their handwriting exemplars, they're going to be very similar, no matter how illegible they are.
No matter how illegible. And then finally, changes in place for this year, 2011. No corroboration for voter registration. Could you explain that one?
Well, again, this is a concern that the current legislature had. You know, with Election Day registration, someone who does not have one of those identifying documents that shows their address, you know, whether it's a financial institution statement, a utility bill, a driver's license with your current address on it, or a state ID card, or as we talked about, the university. If you had someone from your municipality who knew you and had that proof of residence, they could vouch for you, was the term that was used. And I think there was a concern that this was being abused, particularly at university locations where the sense was there really wasn't a knowledge. There was a lot of resistance from local elections officials for that because there were a lot of instances that they could point to where women who had just gotten married and changed their name had no identification with their full name on it because it just happened too quickly. It was a timing issue. Adult children with a parent who no longer had a driver's license and they were paying the bills, and so they didn't have that kind of identification when they, you know, might have moved them into a new location and needed to change their registration. So there are some practical trade-offs here, but this legislature was very concerned that perhaps this process was being abused, and that was one thing they were going to do to tighten up Election Day registration.
Okay, then in summary, any elections held this year, voters are going to be asked for a photo ID. If they don't have it, they're going to get information. They're going to have to sign the poll book. And if is it the case of someone voting for the first time, they're going to have to prove the 28 consecutive days of residency?
Well, it's not a question of proving you. You know, that's an issue that they could be challenged on. But if they're registering from that time period on your registration form, you're certifying, I have lived at this address for at least 28 consecutive days before the election.
Okay. Now, the dress rehearsal, let's get past that period. 2012, it all kicks in, right?
That's right.
And when's the first election that people are going to have to comply with a photo ID?
Third Tuesday in February of 2012.
And that's February 12th?
February of 2012.
I'm sorry. Okay, February
2012.
I'm not sure
what the third Tuesday is off the top of my head, but you know, somewhere around the 18th, 19th.
Okay, and then there's we have a new set of rules. Let's go to a summary of that. Photo ID will be required for the February 2012 primary. The name on the ID must conform to the name on the voter list.
That means if your driver's license says Steve, but the voter list says Stephen, we're going to take it.
Okay.
Robert, Bob, you know, we're not going to get hung up on those technicalities, you know. A.J. Smith and Andrew J. Smith.
Okay. Yeah. Then the photo on the ID must reasonably resemble the bear. Now, you've heard the talk, my driver's license, the photographer, you know, hadn't done this for a long time. It's a horrible picture. Reasonably resemble?
Again, that's to take some of the pressure off the poll workers and to recognize that people change. Our driver's licenses can be 8 years old. I wanted to use my driver's license before, the one that was renewed this year. It was a great picture. I'm not quite as happy with the second one.
Not quite as happy? What if you shave the beard? Reasonably? Yep. Okay.
Well, if I'm able to lose enough weight.
In the eyes of the poll worker, then?
That's
reasonable.
Right. Reasonable.
Okay. The address on the ID does not need to match the address on the voter list. Now, let me use my own example. I moved from Madison to a suburb 5 years ago. The driver's license I have still says Madison address. A problem? No problem.
No problem. Because, again, the photo ID is to make sure the person, we're looking at the person. And it was a recognition that we issued driver's licenses for 8 years. We no longer update the driver's licenses with a new address.
Right.
We used to put stickers on them. We don't do that anymore. It was a recognition that the ID is still a good ID. It's got your picture on it. It's got your name on it. But we're not going to get hung up on the address if you're already registered to vote. If you need to register to vote, you're going to have some current proof of residence. And that could be the driver's license has the current address. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we use utility bills, financial statements, that kind of information, a government document to show that you are eligible to vote from that location. But once you're already registered, we're interested in your name and does this reasonably look like you.
Voters who do not bring photo ID to the polling place will be issued provisional ballots. And let's walk quickly through, if you cast a provisional ballot, what has to happen?
Basically, a provisional ballot's like any other ballot, except it doesn't go into the ballot box. It doesn't go into the machine. It's not counted. It gets sealed up in an envelope very similar to an absentee ballot envelope that you would get if you were mailing in your absentee ballot or voting in the clerk's office. You're given some information with that, and you fill out a form on the outside of the envelope identifying who you are, mm-hmm. So that you have until 4 o'clock on the Friday following the election to come back with the proper identification.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That's three-day period.
3 day period.
Okay.
That helps people who forgot their driver's license. We hear in rural areas people don't carry their wallets. They don't have their identification with them. It helps out people who, needed to be reminded, gives them a short window of time to get that information.
You know what strikes me, Kevin, just on, you've got how many clerks that oversee elections locally?
1,850.
1,850. And they have an army of how many poll workers, wonderful volunteers who care about democracy, who come in and work the polls. How big is that army?
It depends on the election, between 20 and 35,000.
20 and 35,000. All of these people, clerks and poll workers, have to come in and learn all this stuff in some cases as early as July. Big change.
Big change. Big change for that what did we say it was? 3/11 of the state.
Yes, 3/11 of the state.
It's a big change.
But 100% of the state next year.
Right. Well, we've got time between now and next February, and the dress rehearsal should help. We meet with the county clerks next week.
Yep.
They're instrumental partners for us in working with the locals. We're meeting with one of the municipal clerk districts also next week. We've been working on training materials. The legislature gave us a decent budget to get the information out and to do the training. And we will be focusing a lot of attention in every corner of the state to train the election officials, but also to inform the public.
Well, what about the poll workers? What about these great people who come in because they care about our democracy and sit there? Do you look for some of the poll workers to drop rather than having to get familiar with this? That's not a reasonable photo.
There's always turnover with the poll workers. I mean,
is there going to be more?
I don't think there'll be more. We've had a lot, quite frankly, in this decade because there's been so much change, so much more attention paid to election officials. I mean, our statewide recount also highlighted areas where, we had laid out requirements, and we want to make sure that they are truly dotting their I's and crossing their T's, because public confidence rests on these individuals. And I talk to them, and they are so dedicated, so committed to making this process work. Yep. They don't see it as a gatekeeper, but they see themselves as facilitators. How can we ensure that people are able to participate in the process? But on the other hand, I do recognize there's a fatigue factor, and sometimes we're going to see some of those changes for that reason. Again, most of the people who work at the polls are over 60 years old,
mm-hmm.
And they look and they say, I've got other things I can do with my time.
Yep. Okay. Well, now this next point is critical. Forms of IDs that are acceptable. Wisconsin Department of Transportation issued driver's license, and let's make that point again. The address does not have to match, does not.
Does not, but it has to be current.
That's okay. Yep. And we'll talk about it a little bit later, a Wisconsin Department of Transportation IAD card, correct?
That's right.
An ID issued by a U.S. uniformed service, those are your military IDs?
That's right.
Also has to be current?
Also has to be current.
Current U.S. passport?
Mm-hmm.
Certificate of naturalization issued within the last 2 years. Is this something that you think the poll workers will see pretty often or pretty rare?
Pretty rare. Pretty rare. A lot of individuals who are naturalized and gone through the process already have a driver's license. So they're probably not going to rely on that item. But it is something that if you've taken the time, the exam, and everything that you need to become a U.S. citizen, been here the required time period, that's a document that they treasure.
Okay. Wisconsin, as you know, has 11 tribes. Do all of them issue IDs to those that are enrolled members?
My understanding is they all do. There could be some variations, but there are benefits from the tribal standpoint for issuing identification. So it's in their interest to have had those, and there's a recognition that we will take that picture identification.
I see. Okay. Unexpired ID issued by a Wisconsin accredited university or college. Now, this was the one that there was a lot of debate in both the Senate and Assembly on this. So what should be allowed? So, Kevin, is this a correct summary? The college or university ID that will be accepted has to have the date it was issued, the signature of the student, the expiration date up to 2 years after it was issued, proof that the student is enrolled on the date the card is presented to vote. Do you look for that to be a big issue, especially in Madison, where you have...
I see that as one of our challenges. You know, it's clear that a lot of university students may not have driver's licenses, may not have other types of picture identification that would be acceptable, but it really is the Wisconsin driver's license or the ID card that's going to be key,
right.
And they will look to this. And I think outreach, working with the universities, is going to be our biggest challenge. We've already had some of the private colleges come to us, and we expect the university system will as well. How do they redesign their cards to meet these statutory requirements? But I think there's a recognition that students are a very active participant, at least in the presidential elections, and we don't want to exclude them simply because they don't drive cars, they don't have access to state-issued IDs, or they haven't taken the time. But it's not a simple process. As you see, that there are requirements. The university will make some changes. The student's still going to have to take some initiative.
Two of the senators who could face recalls, depending on any pending lawsuits in Dane County, Senator Randy Hopper, he's got UW-Oshkosh in his district. Senator Sheila Harstar, she's got UW-River Falls. Could this be a major sticking point as early as within a few weeks?
No, because, again, if they don't have the identification, they're not prevented from voting in those elections.
But a student at UW-Oshkosh for the last semester is not currently enrolled, so they still would be allowed to vote?
Well, they'd be allowed to vote.
Because they're on summer break,
They're on summer break, but the issue is, are they living in the district? Have they lived there for 28 days before the election? If they're absent, is it only a temporary absence? You know, if they were registered to vote and say maybe they went home for the summer, they'd still be eligible to vote as long as they have that intent to return and they'd been there for 28 days, which would have been through that semester.
Intent to return. How can a poll worker age 60 plus determine intent to return?
Well, again, with residence and intent to return, that those are not issues that get evaluated at the polling place. This is where someone may raise a challenge, but students with their mobility is always a problem. The address that they're at in the spring is usually a different address than they're at in the summer and different from in the fall. You know, all of us get cheap rent during, you know, the sublets in the summertime. You move out of the dorm, you find yourself a 3-month rental before you move to another location.
Right.
It will be a challenge in the sense that because they're mobile, many of them won't be around for the elections. But I think, again, these are high visibility elections. We want to make sure they understand the rules.
Well, you heard the arguments in the Capitol. Democrats say it's this provision that will disenfranchise some of Wisconsin's college students. Reaction?
Well, it's not. It's going to be more work for the students. And I think we want to make sure our voters care enough about this to be prepared. The tools are there for them to vote. They're not onerous, but, you know, to the extent if they're disenfranchised because, you know, I think you look at that more as did you do something arbitrary to cut them off from participating? Here, the rules have been changed, but they've been changed, you know, 2 months out.
Okay.
There's plenty of time to educate. So I would argue, yes, it's going to be acknowledged. It would be more difficult for students to vote and to participate, but there's not going to be a cutoff of their ability to participate.
Okay. Now, finally, winding down here on the list of what applies in 2012, voters without a photo ID can get a free Wisconsin ID card from DMV. This is Wisconsin Department of Motor Vehicles. Are these free IDs not being issued this year, or are we starting this next year?
A little known secret is you can always get a free ID if you don't have a driver's license from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. You simply have to say you're unable to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
This law makes it clear if you don't have a Wisconsin driver's license and you want an ID just for voting, it is a reason why you can have a free ID.
Because otherwise, I mean, do you have to go in and say, I want an ID so I can vote, and then it's free? If you go in and get a WISDOT ID now, is it $10 or something?
$18.
So this waives that if you go in and say, I want this to be able to vote.
Right, and you don't have to claim that you don't have the money. You just say, I want it for voting. Now, one of the things is if you have a Wisconsin driver's license, you're not going to get an ID card.
Yeah, I understand. Absentee voters, how have these changed? Must provide copy for photo ID with absentee ballot query. Is that any big deal?
This is a big deal. Absentee voting is going to be a bit more of a challenge for people who get their absentee ballots by mail. If you go into the clerk's office, it's just like being at the polling place. You show your photo ID. Most of our absentee voters vote that way. But for people who regularly get their ballots by mail because they're snowbirds, they don't get out much,
Is it snail mail or email?
Snail mail.
Snail mail.
Snail mail. We send it. Email absentee ballots out to our military and overseas voters. We're required to do that if they request. And the clerk has the discretion at this point to send those ballots out. It's usually going to be someone who contacts them late in the process, and they know that if I put it in the mail, they're not going to get it.
I see.
Absentee ballots always have to be mailed back. But if you vote regularly from the same address, you provide a copy of that identification one time. The clerk makes a record of it. As long as you don't change your address, you're okay. People who are in special facilities, nursing homes, have that same option, or they can have a certification done by the people who witness their absentee ballot.
I see.
So, but it is cumbersome to think about. When we talk about absentee voting, there will be a few extra steps, and that's what makes the implementation of this law very challenging when you're looking at, you know, in presidential elections, we had 22% of our voters vote absentee.
22%. And that's been soaring.
And that was in 2008. Now, most of them were in person.
Yeah.
But that also means we had a significant number of people voting by mail.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure that they understand the rules because otherwise their ballot's not going to get counted.
Okay. And I think you dealt with the exception for military overseas and those who are confined. Now, Kevin, I was surprised and I remain surprised. What's the logic to eliminate straight party voting beginning with the presidential election in November 2012?
You know, that's a question that goes back and forth. Political scientists write, you know, they get their tenure by writing on these things. And there's lots of different views on who that benefits. You know, for years we had straight party voting in Wisconsin except for president. That changed in 2000. They added president to it. And that was a reflection of the fact that with straight party voting, if president was on there, Wisconsin had a strong third party, the Progressive Party.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't want a strong national candidate knocking out the state partisan candidates. By 2000, we didn't have that option. And so they added president to the straight party, made our ballot design a little easier. A lot of people feel that with straight party voting, people aren't thinking about each individual race.
I see.
Yet this forces the voter, rather than say, you know, all one party, to say, make their choice in each of those. Again, it changes the ballot design, but it really forces the voter to say, if I'm going to vote in this race, I'm going to make the choice. I think you'll see a lot of races down the ticket won't get votes.
Won't get votes. Okay. We're almost out of time, so just a couple questions. What are the estimates of this whole system of photo ID? How much is it going to cost? And where's GAB going to get the money?
Well, you know, we had a fiscal estimate of about $2.2 million to implement this with a requirement. We have some sustaining requirements of about $250,000
mm-hmm.
Of additional outreach that we will have to do for every election. You know, DOT and the university system also had estimates of their costs that really, you know, it's hard for me to remember their specifics, but I think people were talking $5 to $7 million total when you talk about the redesign of the student ID cards and you talk about the availability of free photo IDs. I can't speak to that as much. The legislature gave us $1.8 million towards that. So
okay.
We're short about $400,000 of what we think we need,
okay.
And we'll have to find that by reassigning staff or cutting back what we think needs to get done on that. We've already started a lot of work without, because that money doesn't show up until after July 1st when the governor signs the budget.
I see. Okay. And how are you going to promote it? If I'm a voter, first you have to train your clerks and your poll workers very quickly, especially in these mm-hmm. 11 regions. But how are you going to do PSAs?
We'll be doing PSAs. We'll be speaking to as many groups as we possibly can. We're already trying to figure out what's our criteria here. I've got someone who wants me to speak on a Sunday afternoon in the middle of the summer. And so we're going to try and make sure that we are as available as possible. We're going to be working a lot with community groups because we need to have people helping us spread the word. PSAs, we'll be working with a public relations firm to help design some messages that we think can get out effectively.
Okay.
You know, I've seen other states. I went to a wedding in North Dakota when they implemented it, and I knew just driving halfway into North Dakota that they were going to require a photo ID in the next election just from their billboards. We will try to evaluate what's the best bang we can get for the buck with our media campaign, and we will shamelessly ask the media to help us for free as much as we can.
And you will get that help. Are there any lawsuits pending against this that could overturn it?
There are not any lawsuits. I'm told that there will be. I'm not surprised that there would be a challenge, but at this point I have not been served with any, nor have I been tipped off that there would be any.
Wow. And could those lawsuits derail the photo ID laws just this year, 2011?
Well, I think the focus would be on the 2012 elections. If they're going to attempt to derail, you know, it's going to be the timing of the lawsuit. If they ask for, you know, injunctive relief, there are certain legal standards that they have to meet.
How many elections are we going to hold in 2012? We're going to hold a presidential, we're going to hold a pre-partisan primary, and then we're going to hold a November general. What have I missed?
We have the spring general election that
yes,
you missed.
Yes, I missed that too.
Now, we don't have any statewide offices up in the spring. No Supreme Court, no...
Right. That's right, no Supreme Court elections.
Nor state superintendent. But we do have county board elections.
Yep.
So you'll see primaries in February. You'll see elections in April. We could have recall elections next year.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. They're talking about governor and maybe a Supreme Court justice. Finally, because the goal here is for people to understand this and get information, shamelessly promote the website of GAB. What is it?
It is gab.wi.gov.
And they can get more information.
They can get more information there, and there's a lot of information about voting, about the recalls, about the recounts. But more importantly, we're really focused on information on photo ID, and happy to promote that.
Big change, right?
Yes.
Profound change. Kevin Kennedy, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
It is a big change, and we're all trying to provide the information. Thanks.